So we figured out that Craig doesn't know how the alphabet works.
That was, again, I was very clear.
I mean, you did everything alphabetically except for two T's,
which
you're royally fucked up. You're royally fucked up.
Buddy, Boston and Baltimore are not in alphabetical order either.
Oh, neither are Tampa Bay and Toronto.
Well, Tampa Bay and Toronto is what I was talking about, but this is a conundrum. I'm not owned. Episode 95 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Brett and Craig, it is good to be with both of you guys again, and Craig, I am glad you've recovered at least somewhat from last night.
I wouldn't quite say I've recovered.
It's still a one-to-one series. I from speaking to you today, I feel like you don't know that.
No, I know that. But that was a very winnable game, obviously. It was a great game, but there's no sense of calm in a World Series. You understand that.
Brett, would you rather be a Dodgers fan or a Mets fan right now?
That's not even close. Two, in 2015, the Mets had, it wasn't quite that exciting, but they had that game in game one when Familia gave up the home run to Alex Gordon after being completely unhittable for the entire postseason. So better to happen in game two than in game one.
Well, thankfully, I root for a team that would never lose in the postseason. So, you know, all good things on our end. Okay, so we are back with Tino, and we are going to do our last edition of sort of the around the league roundup of all dynasty prospects who have, seen their value fluctuate wildly one way or the other, or just big name guys who we feel like you deserve an update on. So we started with the two Western divisions. Last Tino, we went over the two Central divisions. So let's just get right after it and go to the East and start with an interesting division in the NL East, which has two absolutely stacked farm teams, two okay-ish farm teams, and then perhaps the worst farm team in all of baseball. So, Craig, we'll start with you, and we'll start in a happy place and go with Atlanta, which alphabetically is actually the first of all the teams we'll be speaking about tonight.
That's true. Atlanta is extremely deep. Just as a note, they'll be our first top 10 list that comes out. I think the big name in this list is Ronald Acuña. I don't think he's going to be a new name to anybody. If he is, welcome to the present. He had a monstrous year. I think he started in high A, right? It wasn't just double A. I think he played at three levels, ended in triple A, was absolutely absurd. Probably could have played in the majors by the end of the season, but they have no reason to do that. I would expect him to be up kind of around Super 2 time next year, Brett, do you think? Or
I wouldn't be surprised.
It wouldn't be shocking if they brought him up in April, yeah.
Yeah, I think certainly no earlier than end of April, but
yeah.
I think it's possible.
Yeah, he's the total fantasy package. He's power and speed and average. He does swing and miss a bunch, but he does everything else so well that it really doesn't matter. And even if he loses a bit on average compared to what he's done in the minors in terms of batting average, the speed is, I mean, just the combination of power and speed is absolutely monstrous, and he's not going to kill you in average. He's not, a modern day Mike Cameron or anything like that. Like, he's going to hit for average and run and hit for power. So it's a really exciting guy. I mean, that's I'll pose to you guys, but where was he on the midseason list for you guys? And is he number one now?
I should probably know where he was on the midseason list. I think he was number five.
Okay.
For some reason I had eight in my head. So top 10, certainly.
Okay. He was definitely top 10. He's almost certainly top two at this point. I think there's an argument as to whether him or another Washington Nationals, another NL East prospect is number one, but I would not be surprised if he ended up at number one on our list.
He's number one for me.
I was going to say he'd be my number one. So in terms of shifting value, he was a hot name coming into the year, and he only kind of solidified that. But I think he even overshot what people thought, even people optimistically thought he could do. But there are a bunch of names on this list and in this org that kind of moved around, and mostly for the positive, because since it's an absolutely stacked system. Ben, who do you like?
I don't know if I like him so much as I'm impressed that Alex Jackson is back from the dead.
Yeah.
Because he's someone who obviously I had, I don't think I was alone in just completely writing him off.
I've been writing him off since he was drafted.
that is objectively true. But not only did he show some signs of life at the plate, but also back to catching. So truly sort of the best case scenario for him from a fantasy perspective. And, you know, he seems like he's been around forever because he was so young when he's drafted, but he'll only be 22 next season. So not a guy I'm looking at as a top 100 prospect, but, you know, maybe back on the top 200 and considering he was left for dead, quite a nice turnaround.
Yeah. And if you wanted to, like, if you were an Alex Jackson truther and wanted to put him in the back end of a top 100, I think that between 100 and 200 is probably squishy enough that you could find a way to do it if you were a true believer. Mm-hmm. Given that he's sticking at he's back behind the plate, and there were relatively positive reviews. I know he's at the Arizona Fall League right now, and I think he just hit a cycle tonight.
He's leading the Arizona Fall League in home runs.
I was going to say, I know he's absolutely mashing there. I think he had a cycle tonight. The reviews of his defense have been decidedly mixed, but it's also a long season, especially since he did move back behind the plate and he's probably a little bit tired. So I think people are giving mixed reviews, but also kind of saying, take it with a grain of salt. It's hard to judge that kind of stuff out there. So Brett, who's your name here?
Because I'm doing my best to avoid talking about any pitchers, which is really hard in the Braves system.
They have all the arms.
Yeah, I will slide over to another hitter who is certainly performing well in the Arizona Fall League as well, and that's Austin Riley. Riley's another sort of back from the dead-ish prospect for the Braves. He was, pretty highly touted coming out of the draft, and then mixed reports along with poor performance kind of diminished his stock a little bit, especially heading into 2017. But, Riley acquitted himself pretty nicely, ended up making it up to Double A and had a 900 OPS in about 50 games or so with Mississippi. He's now in the AFL. He's hitting some dingers and, looks like a potential, average to plus power third baseman, even if he doesn't really hit very much for average. So not quite the ceiling that I think people were hoping 2 years ago, but still plenty good enough to be a good fantasy prospect and someone who's, at least gotten himself back in the discussion as a top 100 fantasy prospect, even if he doesn't ultimately make the list.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a tough swing, I think, is the big thing with Riley, but he really made it work, and he didn't swing and miss that much for the amount of power he has. So there's a lot of balancing to do there, but he's done it so far and given his age in Double A, it was a really impressive season. The one name, if we're going to stick with bats, in this system. Kevin Maitán obviously had a huge amount of hype. I think his stock is lower than it was entering the season. A lot of reports about his physical condition were not particularly good, to the point that no one thinks he's a shortstop at this point. I know John Eshelman on our prospect team saw him, and he kind of thinks there's a decent chance he ends up at first base. I think that's one of the more aggressively negative opinions out there. But he, Maitán, you know, he's only 17. There's a lot going on and a lot of development to do. But he wasn't kind of the polished package heir to Miguel Cabrera that he was built up to be pre-signing. So that's worth noting.
Yeah, there's some room to sell Maitán still if you're not a believer that he's going to bounce back into a, you know, sort of a top 10 fantasy prospect eventually. So, you know, leverage that while you can. If you're not confident, there is still time to get out.
Yeah, and the other, just since there are a billion arms to talk about and we tend to be tepid on them, I'd like to ask each of you, which arm in the system do you want? Like, who's the top arm that you, for you?
Colby Allard.
Yeah, I don't. I think I like Kyle Wright more than Brett does, but Allard is the answer for me as well.
Wright would be my number two. I like him better than Soroka and Anderson, but yeah, it's Allard, and honestly, I don't think it's that close.
Okay, yeah, he'd be my guy for fantasy as well. I mean, I think to me the Allard, Gohara, and Wright are really interesting. Gohara had a really good year and got to the majors. I still think he's extremely high risk. I question whether he can stay, you know, given his build, whether he can stay a starter throughout his career. But if he can, his stuff is absolutely electric. So those would probably be the three names I'd target. Soroka is going to be high on prospect lists, but it's more of a middle rotation, not a bat missing profile. So
that's Gohara does have my big, beautiful boy upside.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of just being the biggest, most beautiful boy.
Yeah, that's true. A big, beautiful baseball boy.
He's
got the highest upside in the system, I think, in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, I would not. I mean, there's a lot of arms, and there's a lot of good arms in the system. And Ben and I will get to this when we get down to the nitty gritty of the list. But I would not be surprised if Allard and Wright were the only two arms from this list that ended up really being in consideration for the top 100.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're arms. They're just. Right. They're not bats.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Braxton Garrett.
Pass.
All right, and on to the Mets farm system. Who do we want to talk about here if we're staying with arms? Pronouncing this. Zapuki?
Zapuki.
I believe it's Zapuki. So Zapuki is out for the next 12 to 18 months after Tommy John surgery. Unless you are in a crazy deep league, there is no point in holding on to him. That's just that he's too far away with too much risk and at this point. I'm not doing it. There's really not very much interesting in this system, which is really a shame.
Well, my next question to you is there anyone interesting you want to talk about? But it seems like you've preempted that.
Yeah, I mean, David Peterson sucks for fantasy. Justin Dunn could be good, but he also might not be. Jimenez is good.
He went backwards. Yeah. I mean, Jimenez
Dunn
is good,
went but backwards. I think, you know, I still think Dunn has a future as a starting pitcher, and I think he has a bounce back season in 2018, but I don't think we're talking about him as even if he does bounce back, I don't think we'll be talking about him as a top 50 fantasy prospect. I think he'll bounce back to sort of mid rotation status, and I think he could be in the upper minors by the end of next year. So not everything's relative.
So Brett, is Peter Alonso just not fat enough for you?
It's partially that. I like Alonso as a really deep league play. I don't think the hit and power combination is going to be enough to hold it against better pitching.
I have nothing to add to that. I feel like your Pete Alonso scouting report is going to be substantially more accurate than mine.
I think the best bat in the system is Mark Vientos. Would you disagree, Brett?
I would take Jimenez over Vientos at this point. I like Vientos, but I'm curious to see what he does in full season ball, because he certainly earned a low A assignment coming out of the gates in 2018. He's extraordinarily young. I think he still has not turned 18. Yeah, he doesn't turn 18 for another month and a half.
Yeah.
So he is about as young of a draft pick as you possibly get, which is an extraordinarily positive attribute. I think Jimenez has a little bit higher floor and Vientos has a little higher ceiling.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that. But for fantasy, I don't even think Jimenez is. It's just the overall fantasy output, I don't think, is going to be that interesting. So if there was one bat I'm picking in this system, it's going to be Vientos just based on ceiling.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I don't know. Chris Flexen had a good year for Chris Flexen, and he was bad in the majors, but, you know.
Yeah.
He's nothing. We should just move on.
Just move on. It's not great.
Yeah. So let's move on, but keep the same tenor of the conversation. In Philly, we'll bring up Mickey Moniak, number one pick. Had a really bad year. And I'm not sure. I mean, it'll be. I haven't really thought about him from a fantasy perspective very much, just because I've been kind of more involved in hearing the scouting reports on him, and our team saw him a bunch. But like, what is your fantasy outlook on him, Brett?
I am down on him, but I'm not going to be down on him as I think our prospect team is going to be on those rankings. Mm-hmm. I get the reports and I get the, it makes sense. I understand it. But, just like there is value to be had in not giving up on a fantasy star after a down season, there is value to be had by not giving up on someone with very high draft pedigree after one down season, especially their first full pro season. I don't think any outcome would surprise me from Moniak in 2018. If he just continued this trajectory and kind of had a 650, 700 OPS in the Florida State League, I would not be surprised. Or if he came out and just started hitting like he was supposed to hit, I would not be surprised. So given the range of outcomes and the upside that I think he still has, I'll value him reasonably well going into 2018, just with a very close eye on him.
Okay. Yeah. I'm predisposed based on what I've heard to be much different. I agree that not shifting too big, off of one season is a smart thing to do. I think the fact that he was kind of getting shielded from some left-handed pitchers already speaks to kind of a confidence issue and how the organization sees him. They drafted another center fielder, so I don't know how he's going to get playing time in center. I don't know. That's obviously not as big a deal fantasy-wise, but it's I don't know. It's just, it was a tough season. It was a tough looking season. And like you said, he could have a 650 OPS in next year or be what he was supposed to be. But what he was supposed to be wasn't going to be a monster OPS type either. So unless he really like ticks up how much he's running, I don't know. He was always going to be kind of like a middling speed, good average guy, right? Like that was the upside. And if we're calling that into question already, like, sure, he was the first overall draft pick and that's good pedigree. But part of that was because he was taking a deal at number one. So I think there's just, he was highly thought of. There's no doubt about that. But there's also plenty of reasons to kind of, you know, maybe find the people who are like Brett and still believe if you're in a league with them.
Yeah, when I say draft pedigree, I don't mean number one overall draft pedigree. I mean,
sure, like, but he was a first round
top 10 talent draft pedigree. He was a number one overall pick, but I think you'd be hard pressed to find anyone who thought he was the number one talent in the draft. But I think almost everyone before the draft would have said he was a top 10 talent.
Yeah. All right, Ben, who do you like here?
So someone I like who I'm having a little bit of a tough time with after his 2017 is Franklin Colome. As everyone who listens to this podcast knows, I'm a big go for the upside guy, and I always viewed Colome as sort of a really high risk, high reward player. And he was sort of the numbers don't back that up in terms of what he did in 2017. I mean, between high A and double A, he didn't miss a ton of bats. In high A, at least the walk rate got a little better, but still wasn't great. A case of the scouting report not really matching up with the production on the field. And he's still young. He's 22, and I imagine he'd start back at AA. So there's plenty of time. But, you know, either of you, maybe we'll start with Craig, but Brett, if you feel better equipped to answer it. I mean, what do you make of either Colome specifically or a scenario like that where, you know, the numbers just don't match up with what the scouting reports say a guy has?
Yeah, I can start. I mean, I think with him, the numbers don't match up because he's either one guy or another guy. There are times he comes out and dominates a game from start to finish, and there are other times he's just, I mean, inning to inning, he can be totally different. So it's a big thing for him is he's 6'6". He's a big guy. It's about finding consistency with his mechanics and his delivery, because when they fall apart, it's a nightmare and everything goes south. But when he's on, he looks like one of the best arms in this system. And that's saying something given some of the other arms in this system. So it's just one of those things that I think the numbers present kind of a middle in between there. And he's rarely even that middle consistently. It's just that he's either extremely good. And so I think what you're saying in terms of going for the upside makes a bunch of sense. With him, it still applies to him because when he is on, he's extremely good. Brett, I don't know if you have anything to fill that out.
Yeah, with someone like Colome, if the stuff is still there, I don't really care about the middling stats.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, he's 93 to 95, touches 96, curveball, yeah, slider.
The stuff is legit. I mean, if he's gonna put it all together, it's still going to be very, very high upside from a fantasy standpoint. I don't think that has changed. This year hasn't really soured me on what his eventual upside could be. Obviously he just, you know, he hasn't put it all together yet, which is understandable. He's only 22. So
yeah, I mean, I think the other thing to point out with him is that So he's at double A, which is great. Like these high upside but high risk guys, I mean, there's a very good chance he ends up in the bullpen too, right? So with these guys, like getting to double A is great, but he's 22, he's in double A, and he didn't get closer in terms of refining his consistency, in terms of reaching what his upside is. So the fact that he's kind of still the same guy he was in 2016 at low A, and he's still that guy in 2017 at high A and double A, to me, there's kind of more risk that he's going to end up in the bullpen, given that he's closer to the majors, but no closer to being a consistent starter, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would say about him. Brett, would you care to talk about the other arm that we've talked about nonstop at BP on the prospect side?
Yeah, have we? I assume we've talked about Sixto plenty on this podcast, or have we not?
Ben, do you remember? I feel like we haven't talked about him that much.
I think we talked about him a little around the midseason rankings because Jeff sort of went long on him.
Yeah.
But I don't really think, I mean, he's certainly not at like Schwarber, Austin Meadows territory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He probably should be.
Yeah. Sixto is just, he could be just stupid good. There are probably going to be one or two pitchers ranked ahead of him on the fantasy prospect list just because he's not quite there yet from an ETA standpoint. But in terms of pitchers who haven't played in the upper minors yet, I think he's a clear number one for me. The stuff is phenomenal. The fastball, the secondary stuff, the command, the reports are really, really good. He's got a legitimate chance to be an SP1 at some point, but he's also not large, and who knows how he will hold up eventually. And that's it's a cheap argument to make because, you know, I don't think anyone has a great idea of what makes pitchers hold up and what makes pitchers not hold up. But historically, he doesn't look like a pitcher that would hold up as well as someone that looks like Kilmay, for example.
In recent memory, the last guy who had just absurd stuff but wasn't the traditional build was Anderson Espinoza.
And we know what happened to him.
Right.
To
him. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's very possible. I mean, we've had a number of pitchers who are 6 foot or less and right-handed succeed in the majors. It's just it's a slight impediment, but the stuff is completely real.
The other thing with Sixto is that he's a converted shortstop, so he's extremely athletic, which I think if you're going to be 6 foot is something that's really necessary.
Yes.
If you're going to be one of the shorter guys, is to be really athletic. His mechanics are, you know, he's able to repeat his mechanics really well. And the other thing is that, like, Greg Goldstein has a scouting report on the site. But when he puts a future 80 on his fastball, current 70. I mean, he hits 101. It's an extreme. Everything about his profile is basically extreme. But so he has one fastball listed, but he throws a four seamer with big life. He throws a two seamer with big life. So he's got like three. And I think, I'm going off memory here, but I think Jarrett Seidler, who saw him a bunch, has him cutting the ball a little bit. Greg only lists three pitches, but he's basically got five given the fastballs, and he manipulates everything he throws. So when you look at it and think, oh, geez, only three pitches or something like that, like he's got an entire arsenal that he just varies off of the main offerings. It's a really exciting profile.
Yeah, he's a very exciting guy.
The other name in the system, I think, that probably shifted their value the most in one direction anyway, was Scott Kingery. I've always kind of liked him since he was a second round pick a few years ago, but he hit for more power than. So in 2017, he hit 26 home runs. He had hit eight his entire between 2015 and 2016. Part of that is that the Phillies AA stadium is a really good place to hit, but he hit a bunch of he has still hit eight home runs in AAA. He was just kind of attacking the pitches on the inner half a little bit more from the reports I received, and so he was, you know, putting a charge into ones that he was able to get to. And then some of it was just benefiting from the ballpark a little bit, but still more power than we anticipated just in general. And if he can hit for power, he's a really intriguing prospect, even if it's only average power, because he runs a lot. So that's, I, I don't know if I'm just not having someone come to mind, but probably the best second base prospect out there right now.
Yeah, I mean, he is the, you know, and we talk about, you know, we do this. We talk about Reading being a really good place for especially right-handed hitters to hit, but you know, so is Citizens Bank Park.
Sure.
So right. Not yeah. To the extent that Reading is, but you mean we're talking about, you know, even if Kingery has slightly below average power, truly, he could hit 20 home runs in Philadelphia.
Between the park and the ball. Exactly. And that's the other thing is he hit 26 home runs with the minor league ball, which is a different ball than the major league ball. And I'm not 100% certain, but my recollection is that it has not changed the way the major league ball has.
That is my understanding as well.
I believe that's true. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's worth noting. There are a bunch of other names. I don't know if we want to spend, I mean, J.P. Crawford, can Ben, what's your take on his status as someone who's kind of been on a roller coaster the last couple of years?
Yeah, he is, man, if you had to give me three or four most difficult fantasy guys to evaluate, he'd be on the list. So the plan is not for him to play third moving forward, correct?
Correct.
It's, well, yeah, he shouldn't, but Freddie right. Galvis is there. I'm assuming that they deal Freddie Galvis, but
yeah,
I don't know. Pete McKinnon, who's no longer there, was intent on playing Galvis every game at shortstop. So maybe that's one of the reasons that they decided to move on. I don't really know, but he really should play shortstop.
Yeah. So let's assume he's going to be a long-term shortstop still, because he certainly has the tools to do that. So that lowers the offensive bar a little bit. And certainly it was encouraging to see what he did in the second half of the season in AAA, specifically in terms of power, because I think people think about Crawford as a no power, like big speed guy. But despite the fact that he has natural speed, he's
yes.
just not a base stealer as of yet.
Correct.
And who knows if he'll learn how to do that or if it's just not going to be his thing. So if speed is not what he can rely on, he kind of needs that. We'll be generous and call it secondary fantasy tool if we assume the hit tool comes around at some point. So obviously the power surge was really encouraging, but given the fact that as of right now he doesn't run and we don't really know where the hit tool lies, I mean, he's not, I don't think he's top. I don't think he's top 20 for me. I don't know how you feel, Brett.
Yeah, I don't think he's top 20 for me either, but his plate discipline has continued to be pretty strong, both while he was struggling and while he was playing well in the minors. And he, you know, he did show the ability to carry that forward into the majors. I think even with not doing a whole lot offensively, he still got on base at more than a 350 clip, I believe. It was, 356 in almost 100 plate appearances. I mean, the power will need to show up at least a decent amount if he's going to be a, anyone who ever competes to be a top 10 shortstop. But I think we saw glimpses of that this year, and you know, I'm not nearly as down on his hit tool as his minor league batting averages would suggest.
Yeah, I mean, worth noting, Ben pointed out that he had a strong second half. He got healthy, which is a big part of it. He did have some changes to his swing, and from July onwards until his promotion, which was just into September, 61 games, he had 13 home runs, 4 triples, 12 doubles. 285, 385, 544. And that's all in AAA. There is some context. He was repeating the league a little bit, but I mean, he was finally healthy and he changed his swing and those changes took hold. So I think there's a lot more reason to be optimistic for Crawford, and there's a lot more reason for optimism than there has been probably since 2015.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
But no, giving up on Crawford is a bad idea, but he's certainly not he's certainly going to be lower than he was last year in the rankings.
Yeah, and Brett, just the last name we'll spend any time on, Jorge Alfaro, what are you doing with him right now? He's like the same guy he's been his entire career, but now he's at the major leagues.
Yeah, he is. I mean, catchers are just fucking weak, man. He did so much Jorge Alfaro stuff in the majors when he got there. He hit 318, 360, 514 in 107 at bats, and he had 3 walks and 33 strikeouts. That is the Jorge Alfaro experience.
Yeah.
So you know what? He's better than Cameron Rupp.
Yep.
And he's probably going to play. And that's a good place to be, a right-handed hitter with some power. So as long as you're not in an on-base percentage league, I think I actually feel reasonably good about him moving forward. It's not going to be pretty at times.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I'd say with him is just maybe have a competent backup who, when he's in a slump, you switch, because his slumps will kill you.
Yes,
because he doesn't walk, his slumps will absolutely kill you. And when he's looking normal or good, obviously that's when you play him. But I just to toss out some names that we won't spend time in. If you're looking for bats, Hylan Ortiz, I think, is a really good bat. Might be a first baseman, but an interesting guy. And I really like Archimedes Gamboa. He's a shortstop. He might not be that interesting from a fantasy angle, but he's a switch hitter and he really had a strong second half, kind of like Crawford did. He's really interesting, just a name to keep track of. And then on the pitching side, Sir Anthony Dominguez and Adonis Medina are the other names I'd really pay attention to.
Mm-hmm. What's the sigil of House Dominguez?
I'm not sure. I wasn't prepared for that. Ben answers those questions.
God, I don't know enough about the player to be clever here.
Yeah.
He's a Philly, so I don't know, a battery being thrown onto a flaming field or something.
Is it Santa?
Yeah, exactly.
Fields of Fire? Is that?
I was trying to go for a bunch of different things and none of them worked, which is basically my limerick.
The only thing I'll say, Brett, is that I intentionally ignored Adam Haseley. Do you want to offer a shitty defense of him? Because he's not there. Okay, good.
Washington.
Let's move on. You mentioned Victor Robles before, Brett.
Yes.
It's actually Robles.
Robles. I apologize.
Robles if you're nasty.
Do you care to expand?
He's really fucking good. He's, you know, he'll be compared to Acuna a lot this offseason because they are the two best fantasy prospects in baseball. And when you compare them side by side, I think Robles has a little less power, has more average, and probably a little more speed. But similar enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're very comparable. I'm really excited about the potential of seeing Robles in the majors for most of 2018.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So the question is, I mean, are you assuming they trade Michael Taylor or?
I'm assuming something happens. I don't know what it is, but I can't imagine they're going to be able to keep him down for long.
They could just wait 6 days and someone will get hurt. So,
yes,
probably Adam Eaton.
Yeah. Or Bryce Harper. I mean, not the most durable outfield in the world.
That's fair. The other big name, at least in my opinion, in the system is Juan Soto. I don't know if his value shifted a ton. We pumped him really hard on the midseason list. I think he was 12. He's going to be lower than that because the second half of the season, he missed a bunch of time with a hamstring injury. And then at the very end of the season, broke his hamate bone. These are all different injuries that he suffered over the last couple of years, which is, I guess it's good. It's not like a recurring hamstring or something like that. But it's also a little worrisome that there are so many injuries cropping up. The hamate bone tends to sap power for a little bit of time. It was the end of the season, so I don't think it'll affect him too much since he gets the offseason to recuperate. But I'm still insanely high on him. I've talked about him on the podcast before, so I won't belabor it. But I know the injuries are concerning, and that'll be reflected in his rankings a little bit. But if you're going for upside, that's the other name in this system.
I mean, we talk about this a lot, about how teenagers that hold their own in the Sally League it's an extremely impressive feat. Soto, before getting hurt, went out, played a month in the Sally League as a fresh 18-year-old. He had just turned 18, probably 4 or 5 months before opening day, and he had a 950 OPS, had 10 walks and 8 strikeouts. He can really fucking hit, and I think he's going to have a huge year in 2018. I really hope he stays healthy.
Me too. Yeah, if he stays healthy, it's going to be a monster season. I mean, I think credit to Jeff Paternostro. People were already asking who the next Victor Robles was last year, and he threw out Soto in that vein. And I think if he had been healthy, we would have been talking about him, maybe not in the same breath as Acuna and Robles, but probably the next one.
And if one final note on the national system, if you are looking for someone to be the next Robles, it seems like the Nationals have a never-ending supply of international free agents that just completely blow up when they get to the States. They have two really, really potentially interesting infield prospects that are going to see a lot more stateside ball in 2018, and that's Yasiel Antuna and Luis Garcia. Mm-hmm. And I would not be surprised if either or both of them had a really nice year and vaulted themselves into sort of that next wave of really exciting fantasy prospect group.
Yeah, we had Javi Berrigan. We have video of Yasiel Antuna on the site. If you look him up, we have a 10-pack and video of him. The other flyer name in the system, and I saw him when I saw Soto, was Daniel Johnson. Had a really big year. He's really tooled out. I mean, there's definite questions on the hit tool, but if you're in a very deep league, like one of Brett's weird ass leagues, or a 30-team league or something like that, he's not
weird
as well known.
Formats, excuse
yeah,
me.
Or weird fucking formats. Yeah, thank you.
Branding.
Daniel Johnson's a name worth throwing on your roster if you don't get penalized for having, you know, just guys sitting around on a minor league roster or something like that. One other name in this system, I think, is Joan Baez, who I thought never as good as Enya.
Welcome back to episode 95 of Tino. I don't really know what I hope you used that break for. I hope you just used it to do whatever you needed to do most during that time. So we are going to wrap up our Around the League series with the AL East, which features 2.5 interesting farm systems, and also the Red Sox and the Yankees. So I'm sorry, also the Red Sox and the Orioles. So we'll get the Red Sox and the Orioles out of the way first. Brett, you are one of the only people I know who did not give up on Michael Chavis. And that's looking pretty good, because he's a very different prospect than who we thought he'd be when he was drafted. But I think certainly a back to being a top 100 guy, no?
Yeah, I think definitely at this point. It's funny with him that you hit the nail on the head. He came out of the draft as a one of the best hit tools among prep prospects guy, and ended up just being a power hitter who just swings and misses a lot in pro ball. And you know, that's not to say that he doesn't have that amateur version of himself still in there somewhere. I don't think he's destined to be a low average guy, but the step forward in power is is great to see. And, you know, while I don't think he has the type of upside as that kind of hitter to be a top 50 guy, I think top 100 is right. I think he's right there in the back of the list, and could see playing time. Would have to be probably due to an injury, but I could see him showing up in the second half of 2018 if he continues his progress.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only other Red Sox of real note is Jay Grom, who walked everybody when healthy and then wasn't healthy. So no long-term injury yet, but he was dealing with a left forearm strain, which better than a shoulder or worse than most other things.
Yep. Yeah, I don't think we learned a whole lot about him this year, unfortunately.
No, not at all. And I'm not going to talk about Sam Travis. Craig,
that,
what's up
that
with,
double first name situation?
Yeah, not good. And really, once the Sam Travis Shaw ideal three name platoon was out of the wind, was out, it's just no point.
Yeah, I agree.
Sup with Austin Hayes, Craig?
He's really good. He's not as exciting from a fantasy perspective, but he's one of those kind of what's the phrase, Ben? How's it work? How's it go? Sum of the parts. He's more than the sum of his parts.
He is more.
Are you saying he is more than the sum of his parts, or the sum of the parts is greater than the whole?
I don't know. I don't even know anymore. His tools aren't that exciting, but he's more than the sum of his parts is what I want to say.
Yeah, but he also makes up for it with an extraordinary number of S's in his Twitter handle.
Which is just
dumb.
What, can you expand on that?
Yeah, his Twitter handle is the Austin Hayes, but with three S's at the end.
Mm.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Maybe he's trying to make up for the fact that Hayes doesn't have an E in it for some reason. It should.
Maybe he's the extra S's are for speed. He's trying to will himself to being a better fantasy prospect.
It's certainly not because he's a shortstop.
Nope.
Like if he
it's
was
definitely not because he's a shortstop. But you know who else isn't a shortstop? Who's Ryan that? Mountcastle.
True. True.
But he can.
But
hit.
He can hit.
he can hit. I like Mountcastle better than Hayes as a fantasy prospect. But I don't know that that's going to be a popular opinion.
I really like Mountcastle, and even I don't know if I'd go that far.
Yeah, I Mountcastle had a really, really strong showing in high A and kind of had a rough go at it in double A, but he's also, he's 20, and I will give him a little bit of a pass for his first go around in the upper minors. I think this year will be a better showing, and I think he'll establish himself as a as a sort of a rock solid top 50 fantasy prospect if he hasn't already.
Yeah, also a guy who does not walk at all.
Yes.
Just in terms of the profile. Yeah, I like Mountcastle. I think what's going to be interesting is whether the bat can support. There's a chance he could end up at second base. Like his arm is not great, is not good enough for shortstop. There's a lot of reasons he's not a shortstop. He's 6'3", 195. That's like kind of big for a second baseman. Probably a better fit in left field. But if they did try him at second, which, Jonathan Scope is a bigger player for a second baseman. They were happy enough to trot him out there. If they do that with Mountcastle, obviously I think the profile plays up a lot more. I just think shifting to the outfield is going to make him more of a type of guy than someone who's really interesting.
Yeah, they played him almost exclusively at third base in double A, but like Craig was saying, he just does not have the arm to sustain himself at third base.
Yeah, that's my problem. Like, it's not much of an easier throw, so.
No, and especially if for some reason the Orioles let Machado walk and then Mountcastle is the starting third baseman, in 20.
That's going to be a difference.
It would be glaring. It would be
stark difference. Yeah.
Yes.
So speaking of people who were converted to third base, Gleyber Torres probably would be the Yankees' regular third baseman, and would have been in the playoffs were it not for a freak. He had Tommy John, right? It was
He did
on his non-throwing
shoulder. Yeah,
he slid into a base and screwed up his elbow. If that hadn't happened, I would anticipate that he would have been the third baseman rather than Todd Frazier in the second half for them. I don't know how that's going to affect him coming back. I mean, it's certainly good. It's his non-throwing arm. I don't know how it's going to change his swing, if it will change his swing. Hitters traditionally come back okay from Tommy John, so I don't necessarily assume that there would be any great differences, but I have no idea. It's such a weird, it also wasn't wear and tear, right? It was like an impact injury. So I don't know
what
that
was. It was a pop, yeah.
I don't really know what to do with him. He's a top five prospect in baseball easily. For the non-fantasy side, I don't know where you guys have him. It seems like before the injury, the power was starting to emerge.
Yeah, I think it was starting to emerge. I think what we put him at 9 midseason, or did we? I think we might have put him a little bit, not like around 9 or 10.
I think he just snuck into the top 10. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he certainly won't be any lower than that, because I still believe in the overall fantasy package long term, and he's probably going to be good to start the season on time. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the Bronx by May or June, depending on how he kind of responds during spring training. But yeah, I think all the things that we said about him when he was healthy last year apply now. Just the risk is elevated, obviously.
That makes sense. I think, you know, the Yankees have an extremely stacked system with a bunch of names that are worth talking about in general. But in terms of shifting their value, Florial is the big name to me, more than Gleyber Torres, even with the injury. He's enough. Florial is kind of like Acuna. Like, he was a hot name coming into the season, and I still think kind of blew away what people were anticipating out of him. He was at AA. I don't think he played in AA at the end of the season. I think it was in the playoffs, so it might not be in his game logs or anything like that. Yeah, I think most sites will have him topping out at high. He did play at AA. I think Jarrett Seidler saw him in the playoffs and said he did not look out of place in the slightest. Only 13 homers this year, but the power is very legit. He has a really good approach at the plate, double-digit walk percentage at both low A and high A, and he's going to turn 20 in November. So, like, he played the entire season at double at 19. I expect he'll start the year at double A. Honestly, I think he had 19 games at high A last year, so it's possible he could start back there. But given that they were willing to put him in double A for the playoffs, it wouldn't shock me if they opened him back up there. And he's someone who's, I mean, I would be very comfortable getting aggressive in terms of ranking him.
Yeah, you know, he's got all the things that you want out of someone that you would rank aggressively. I think, you know, we'll see how the chips fall to see whether he's a top 20 fantasy prospect. But you certainly can make the argument for it. You know, the power and speed, even, you know, just by looking at his. But looking at his stat line, you know, Craig, you're right. I mean, it doesn't do his power justice. I think he'll grow into that more. But, you know, sort of in the way we used to think about Gregory Polanco, in that I think he's going to be sort of a more of a speed than power guy at first. And then when the power really starts to come, I think the speed's going to start to wane a little bit. So I don't know that he'll... I don't know that he'll quite ever be the, you know, the huge power and huge speed guy at the same time, like I think some are envisioning, but they're both certainly capable of propelling him to being a fantasy star.
So I know a guy who's pretty popular with Yankees fans, at least, probably not only, but at least is Miguel Andujar. I feel like he often gets brought up with some of the more elite Yankees prospects, even though we in the Dynasty League community don't generally think of him that way. But, I mean, he had a very good 2017. So is he someone who you think should be perhaps thought of more seriously by the sort of Dynasty community, or do his you know, sort of 2017 numbers in AA and AAA overstate his potential fantasy impact, Craig?
Yeah, I think it's a little more of the latter. He's still really interesting. He's got a long swing, and he's got good bat speed, really strong wrists that let him get to the ball despite the length in his swing. But I think it'll be interesting. But I think major league pitchers have a pretty good chance of being able to exploit the length in his swing. And he's a really good athlete. He has kind of a weird throwing motion, which I've heard people talk about, but he should be fine at third base. The thing is, though, like we just talked about, they have Gleyber Torres. I think in this system, he's just more of a utility guy, and it's going to come down to opportunity. If he got out of this system, if he ended up somewhere else, you know, maybe he's maybe he's one of those second division guys that plays up in fantasy and thus is undervalued. But overall, I think it's more of a just a backup kind of bench guy profile for fantasy. I think he, like I said, second division is well within his range in real life, but I think it's a really tough system for him to be in given the profile.
Yeah, I think they're not really extremely similar from a skill set standpoint, but in terms of overall value and how he should be thought of, you know, I kind of think of him the way we thought of Jaime Candelario coming into last year. Mm-hmm. Sort of a guy who could in a different situation could be a solid fantasy contributor at third base, but just wasn't lined up for it. And now he's in a situation in Detroit where, you know, he could be looking at a whole lot of at bats, and he could play his way into that sort of, you know, top 15-ish third baseman if it clicks. I think I that's kind of where I think of Andujar. I think, you know, if all goes well, he could be in a situation in 2019 where he could compete for that kind of fantasy value.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, me too. I like that a lot, actually. All right, so any other Yankees thoughts before we move on to Toronto?
No, I mean, it's a really deep system with a lot to delve into, but I think we talked about most of the impact guys there.
Yeah, right, we talked about most of them. The only thing that I will throw out is that I am not giving up on Dylan Tate.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think he's got the same upside that I think we thought he was going to have coming out of the draft, but he had a sneaky, not terrible season this year. I think he's kind of just a complete afterthought in fantasy right now, and he should be more than just the afterthought that he is.
He's a more extreme version of what we were talking about with Franklin Colomé. He either shows up. I was talking to Jarrett Seidler about this, but like he either shows up and he can show you 97 with some movement and a good breaking ball, and then, you know, later in the same start, it's like 89 to 92 with no movement. And if he's 89 to 92 with no movement,
sounds good.
Right? Yeah, exactly. That's batting practice. So, I think the odds of him showing up with the good stuff will still make you, you know, say wow, but you're not going to see it that much. I think you're much more likely to get something further down the spectrum of what we were describing, and probably more likely to get the bottom end of that spectrum than the top.
As someone who watched Rafael Montero for about 100 innings this year, your whole 88 to 92 with no movement thing doesn't really scare me.
Well, it should scare you. I understand that you've been conditioned, but let me tell you something. Rafael Montero wasn't particularly good, Brett.
I was going to say, Brett, I think you took the wrong lesson away from watching Montero.
Yeah, really.
I'm just surprised I made it.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right.
So maybe Dylan Tate wound up as a Met. That's where this.
Oh God!
Honestly, he deserves it.
Sucks. No. Okay. So, Craig, as a very wise man once asked us on Twitter, why do we get so many questions about Max Pentecost?
It's a really good question. I feel like, given that he said that, we probably don't need to talk about him, right?
Yeah.
I'm happy with whatever you decide.
Brett, go ahead.
It's the name.
It's got to be the name.
I mean, that's it.
It is a good name.
I mean, he was interesting, and I have a fetish for catchers, but he's, like, not even really catching. I don't know. He's okay. He's already 24. He'll be 25 next year. Hasn't reached double A. I don't think we need to talk about him.
No, we don't.
Fine. All right. Talk about someone.
He been surpassed, though, in the name category in his own system, though? Can we talk about this?
Joe, I don't know where you're going.
I like Logan Warmoth. I actually kind of like him as a sneaky fantasy prospect. more for deep leagues, just because I don't think he's going to be his upside is not particularly high. I think he could hit for some average, and really, that's about it. I mean, I don't think it'll be completely empty, but he won't do more than steal a handful of bases and hit a handful of home runs. But batting average is batting average, and I think he could be interesting there. But it's a good name.
Quite the same.
I don't even think it's that good a name.
Whoa, what do you mean?
Why is it such a good name?
Logan Warmoth?
Unless we're talking about an actual moth that goes to war with things, I don't.
It's like
I kind of imagine that he is just a really fucking angry moth that lives in the airport in Boston.
Yeah, I mean, like, if he was in Boston and we got people to say it with the Boston accent, I'd be into it, but I don't know.
All right.
Logan Warmoth.
Yeah. there's something that it's very Boston. Boston.
Like Ben Affleck, like slamming his fists down on a dining room table. Logan Warmoth. <Yeah.
laughs> See, that I'm in on.
Okay. But do you want to talk about any of the good Blue Jays?
Toronto, Canadian. You know, it's like, oh, Logan Warmoth, eh? It's like, no, that's not. yeah, I mean, sure. Do you want to, Ben, do you have an opinion on Vlad
Jr.? He's pretty good.
Yeah, he can hit.
Pretty good at hitting.
Did you guys see his celebration after his triple?
No.
No.
Oh my god. You guys talk about someone, I'll find it for you. I'm gonna let you react to it on air. It's gonna be great.
Okay.
All right. Well, while Craig looks it up, Brett, what do you think about the other the second most famous son of a second most famous major leaguer in the Blue Jay system? Ugh.
I have a feeling I'm probably going to be one of the low guys on Bo Bichette.
Why did you say that like Boba Fett?
It's Bo Bichette, right?
Yeah, but I don't know why your cadence just makes it sound like Boba Fett.
Yeah, well, all I do is talk about Star Wars with my 4-year-old son all the time. So it's probably just unconscious at this point. But I don't see him being a fantasy star, really. I think he'll be good. I'm just not that excited about Bichette. I think he'll certainly be a top 50 fantasy prospect, probably around where I feel like we put him in like the somewhere in the 30s last time. And that probably makes the same amount of sense to me. I just don't I don't think he is going to be like Vlad and give you that kind of upside.
Okay, so I sent you guys a link. If you want to skip to it, go to about 15 seconds, 14, 15 seconds.
All right, I'm ready.
Yep, it's going.
Oh no.
Wait.
I think I'm pregnant.
Oh, it's a top tier celebration game.
Oh God, we're gonna have to You're gonna have to put that in the link to the podcast with a disclaimer.
Like, you know how pissy people get about Puig sticking his tongue out? That is unreal.
How does he have that good of a body already?
It's incredible. It's incredible.
God, you want to talk about beautiful big boys?
I was gonna say he's the next big baseball boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the next one, and he's gonna be glorious.
Oh God.
There's a lot of gyration, is what I will tell our listeners.
Yeah, that's a spoiler alert, but one that you need to know.
George, we should put the link to that in the podcast thing. It's very good.
You got it. It's done.
Awesome. All right. Everyone else in the system is terrible, though.
Yeah, I mean, the shift in value, people really like to talk about good names. Rowdy Tellez.
Yeah, but he's not good now, which is really sad.
He was never that good, is the thing.
No, he was pretty good.
He was not. He's what I would say is someone who has a grooved swing. It's not going to work.
I'll tell you who else has a groove swing, Vladito, after a triple.
That's his groove thing, Ben.
Oh, God.
There's no coming back from this on this podcast. No.
Everyone else. I mean, Alford is still interesting, I think, but.
Yeah. Yep. But, yeah, we can move on.
The Rays. I mean, the best guys on the Rays. I still love Brent Honeywell? Yeah, but he's the same guy. He's kind of followed a predictable trajectory, right? So
yeah, there's
a lot of new stuff to do. And same with Willie Adames, right?
Willie Adames is exactly the same guy, which is good, but he's just exactly the same guy.
Yeah. So he's still good. I mean, we're not trying to blow past them because they're not interesting. It's just if we're highlighting guys who've moved their value, those two guys have been really relatively steady.
Yep.
Yeah. Probably the biggest mover in the system is Jesus Sanchez, right?
Yep. Yeah. Well, positive. Definitely, yeah. Positive. We've got a name behind it. We go the other way. But Jesus Sanchez. I mean, he can hit. We have a bunch of reports on him on the site. I know Nathan Graham saw him in the Midwest League. He can hit. I'm not convinced that there's a ton of power coming, and I think that'll be the interesting thing. He did have kind of a power breakout this year, 15 homers, which was more than he had between the last 2 years combined. But I don't know. He's more of a I don't know. I'm not as in on Sanchez as others are, but some really do like him. And we have kind of several write-ups of him throughout the year on the site. So it's worth checking out there. Yeah, go ahead, Brett.
I was going to say the other guy that I'll mention who is on Bowling Green as well is Josh Lowe, who, mm-hmm. you know, from a stat perspective, I don't think you would immediately assume that he was particularly great, but like I said before in reference to someone else, he's very interesting tools wise, and he is a teenager who held his own in low A, which is just generally a very good sign. So he's someone who I think he's not going to be in the discussion for the top 100 this year, but I think he could easily play his way into that discussion next year. He's got the power, and he's got some speed in there. He can hit.
Yeah. The only other name I'll throw out in a deep sense, I don't think I've really heard anyone else talk about him, but Ronaldo Hernandez, or it might be Ronald Hernandez, in the Rays system is a short season catcher who's gotten I've gotten really good feedback on him. John Ashelman saw him and really liked him. It's very far away. It's a catcher, so there's no I would not advise people even in like 20 team leagues to be going and adding him or anything like that. But again, if you're in weird fucking format leagues like Brett is in, where they add guys before they sign and stuff like that, and it's insanely deep leagues, that's a name to keep an eye on.
Yeah. That's really it. I mean, Brandon Lowe had a really good year in high A, and he's kind of that profile that nobody really thinks twice about until they start hitting in the majors. And I don't think Brandon Lowe is going to be that guy, but it's always, if you're in a really deep league, it's an interesting profile to gamble on, especially because he'll be, you know, he'll be in the upper minors. He played a little bit in double A, but he'll be in double A to start next year.
Yeah. And Jose De Leon, you can let that dream die, is what I would say.
Yep.
Sads. I guess there's really no one else in this system to talk about. I got to tell you, I mean, I'm glad she's not a Ray, because if any was a Ray, I'd have some very mixed feelings. Back to episode 95 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. Please rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever platform you use to listen to this podcast. Every rating and review helps. You can find Brett on Twitter at BrettSayerBP. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in
Concerned About Dodgers.
Goldstein. You can find our producer, George, at George Bissell. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thanks for listening and have a good night.